If you've experienced a DNA surprise, you know that your emotions can range from shock to denial to grief to anger to confusion to joy and around again. And sometimes it's hard to find people who understand this unique experience. Sometimes we feel a little stuck as we navigate this journey. That's why we created the DNA Surprise Retreat. At the DNA Surprise Retreat, you'll enjoy 6 expert-led sessions to help you process your DNA surprise. You'll eat delicious catered meals, and most importantly, you'll build beautiful friendships with people who understand you, all in a stunning private ranch facility in the Arizona desert. If you've had shocking DNA test results, know that you're not alone. This retreat is for you. Join us September 19th through the 22nd, 2024 in Phoenix, Arizona. Registration is open now. Reserve your space at dnasurpriseretreat.com. I'll see you there.
I will add, one of the most profound things that I think really made me shift and revisit this whole thing was the other side of the situation. Whenever he said, "I just can't understand why your mom didn't think that I was good enough to raise you." And I was like, wow. And I said, you are. And I said, I don't think it's never been that. But I think that really put that into perspective. And I remember saying, "You are. And if you want a relationship, I'm absolutely open to it." You know, I said, "I know it's 25 years late, but I know that you're a good person. And I would be lucky to know you." So I think we both at that moment agreed to pick this thing up and figure out what to do with it.
Imagine spitting into a tube, sending off your DNA, and unknowingly turning your life upside down. For me and thousands of others, this is our reality. I'm your host, Alexis Auerselt. In July of 2021, I discovered that I am an NPE, someone who has experienced a non-paternal event. In other words, my biological father isn't who I thought he was. This podcast shares the journeys of people who were shocked by a DNA discovery, mostly through modern DNA testing. We're telling the stories of NPEs, adoptees, and donor-conceived people and their families. This is DNA Surprises. Before we begin, please know that there is a mention of suicide in this episode. If you or anyone you know are struggling with thoughts of suicide or self-harm, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255. By the time Whitney learned the truth about her NPE status, she'd already suffered the loss of the man she believed was her father. In this week's episode, Whitney shares the long journey of getting to connect with her biological father. She shares a wise and compassionate perspective on life and the actions of others. Thank you, Whitney, for sharing your story.
I'm Whitney. I'm 25 and I live in Mississippi. So that's where I was born and raised, and maybe I'll move one day, but currently Mississippi. To give background, like I said, I was born and raised here. And so growing up, it was me. I have a younger brother, so he's 3 years younger. And as far as I can remember, you know, my mom and dad were separated. Never kind of really was weird to me just because that's how I grew up. That was just life up until I was 8 and he committed suicide. So, you know, that was a big deal, like a big life change. So I knew at 8, you know, he had struggles. Like, it brought up a bunch of, it kind of made me aware of mental health. So again, double-edged sword, would have rather not have gone through that. But you know, at 8, I knew that here I am and I have no dad anymore, not in the physical sense. Mm-hmm. So that happened. You just adjust and kind of get to know life now. And we actually moved to a different town, probably about an hour and a half away. 6 years go by. We've established in this new town. And, you know, I see my mom. She had actually found this guy on social media, or rediscovered this guy, I guess I should say. And I've seen her, you know, looking through photos. And I'm not, you know, I don't know what to make of this. But one day, and keep in mind, you know, I'm 14 at this point. She calls me in to talk to her. And she just laid it out. And she was like, you know, I have to tell you, you're at this age now, you know, your dad is not your dad. And I'm just like, what? And so back to the Facebook thing, she was looking at this Facebook because she had rediscovered him on social media. So that was, you know, my birth father's Facebook that she had rediscovered. So that's kind of where that comes into play. But she just said, you know, this is your real dad.
So you had spent 6 years between when your birth certificate father, who you thought was your father, died, and yeah, when you discovered the truth.
6 years, yeah. You know, and talking to her, I think she says that, you know, she had planned to tell me when I was old enough to understand. But I think the social media thing, you know, him kind of coming to the forefront, you know, maybe brought it up. But yeah, 6 years in between. And so I still to this day can't describe what goes through your mind when you learn that. It's just, it's the biggest shock I think I've ever had, really.
Yeah. What did you say? What did you do?
I don't think I said anything. I think at most I may have said, what do you mean? You know, and she was like, you know, your dad that we lost was not your biological dad. This is your real dad. And I had to leave at that point. You know, I think I left the room, and I think I really just had to process even just the bare minimum of what, you know, she had told me, because what do you do with that? And especially at 14.
Right. That's a complete shock.
I'm still process it, you know, to this day, but I think it's such a shock. And I think that's what I've seen so common when I read other stories, is that it's just this big, profound shock is the only word that I can come up with. But I think, you know, whenever you're born, you learn who your parents are, and you learn who's there to care for you and protect you, and you develop a sense of self, like who you are based off of where you come from. And I think that's the building blocks. And I think that you, from there, kind of develop your own personality. So whenever, even at 14, you have a sense of kind of who you are. So I think whenever you, at any older age, kind of just absolutely destroy those very specific building blocks, it just shakes your whole foundation.
Yeah. Did you have any suspicion before she told you?
So I know, you know, looking back, even that night that she told me, I'm thinking, that's why no one ever told me that I look like him. No one has ever told me that. You know, my brother, complete spitting image, you know, of the father that we lost. But I would always look for things like, well, you know, we have brown hair, but in reality, we have no common features. We really had no common personality traits or habits. And it was like, that's why.
Were you close to your dad?
I was pretty close to him. I mean, even at 8, which is a young age. So that was a shock too, because I think whenever you have, you know, the issues that he struggled with, part of which were financial, you know, my eight-year-old brain is thinking, well, if he knew, you know, maybe he wouldn't have been so financially stressed, because if I'm not yours, you don't have to take care of me. It, you know, just trying to reason with things. But, you know, I'm told that he knew, which was surprising.
Okay, so he did know.
So that's what I'm told. And all I can really go off of is, you know, in that situation, what I'm told. So I'm assuming what I've been told, which is honorable that, you know, even when that relationship with my mother fell apart, you still kept contact and you still, you know, were a father. So if that's the case, that is honorable, you know, but at the same time, should have known, you know, I would have liked to have known from the beginning. So,
yeah. So your mom and dad that raised you until you were eight, they divorced at some point?
Say they actually split up maybe when my brother was a year or two, you know, they were pretty young. So these were, my mom was 18. I think he may have been a couple of years older. So these are also young adults trying to make sense. I have to try to look at it from every point of view. So they're young and they find themselves with two kids and that didn't work out. So mm-hmm. Yeah, they split up, which, you know, at that age, that's, like I said, not really strange to me because that had been my reality as far as right. I remember. So,
and he still continued to play the role of your dad, even after the split.
You know, his childhood is a whole story in itself, but I think he did the best that he knew how. But I can't help but wonder, you know, did he know? What did he think about it? If he knew, yeah. You know.
Did your mom share more information later as far as what happened with your biological father?
You know, naturally, I think after I had processed it, I have questions like, how did this happen? Who is this person that I'm looking at? And the first thing I noticed, you know, I'm looking at the pictures of this stranger who I'm now told has, you know, DNA that I have. And I see the similarities and it's a shock, but, you know, so naturally I'm wondering, well, how did this happen? You know, why? So basically the story that I got was, so they dated briefly in high school. This happened against better judgment or, you know, what have you. And they had actually split up. He had plans to actually go to police academy. She said he had his after high school life planned out. And when she found out, they had already split. They decided that they're going separate ways. It's just best to not stay together. Now, when she finds out that she's pregnant, you know, her plans for after high school life are then just tossed. And so she had this decision to make. And she says that she saw how detrimental that was. Not, I guess not detrimental, but how much of a shift had happened when she found out about me. And she chose not to do that to him. Somewhere in there, in that time frame, she met the father that raised me. And so they're together. And she basically lays it out and says, you know, this is the situation. This is whose baby it is. You know, I've decided not to disrupt his plans and tell him. So what do you want to do? And she says that he said, well, I just want to raise her like she's ours and I don't want to talk about it again. So that, I'm told, is the reasoning and the how that they got to that decision, you know, which she reminded me that from a 17, you know, fixing to be 18-year-old standpoint, it seemed like the best decision to make. So I could say that I agree with it or I don't, but I think at this point it doesn't really change anything. I just have to say, you know, that's the decision that she made, you know, and here we are. So
after she tells you the story and what happened and why she made the decision she made, what happens next? Do you want to reach out to your biological father at that point?
Yeah, and that's really what she asked me. So she tells me, you know, the details of everything, and which, you know, I will add, she said that he did go on to reach his goals that he had set for himself. So she said that for that small reason, she was happy that he had the opportunity to do that. And, you know, she offers regret for making that decision because it, you know, she says that it's not the right decision. I don't think that it was. But yeah, so from there, what next? And that's basically how it was laid out to me. Do you have interest? Do you want to proceed? You know, do you want to reach out? And she was supportive in that. You know, if you want to reach out, I will go to the ends of the earth to put you into contact with these people If not, we'll leave it alone. But naturally, yeah, I'm curious. And so I want to say she messaged him on Facebook, even, and the Facebook page disappeared. So not a good sign. I don't know what exactly was said, and maybe Facebook wasn't the best approach, but I'm not sure what other avenues were possible at that point. So what we ended up doing was reaching out to his mom. So my biological grandmother, you know, at this point, mom's like a mediator because I'm 14. I have no idea what I'm doing.
Right.
So we reach out to her, and I remember we called her for the first time. I'm so nervous. And I'm talking to this woman I've never met. And she said, I've seen pictures. I already know the answer. And I'm just thinking, I've seen pictures. I'm a little curious, but you know? And she says, I know. You know, we're just talking. And she's the most welcoming lady that I've ever talked to. And so we proceed, because I'm still not convinced. This is still a lot. So we, at some point, you know, set up a DNA test. And that's actually who we ended up meeting with and doing the DNA test, was his mother. And I remember, you know, I met this little petite, skinny lady who just, she says what she feels, and she is her own person. And I met her, and it was just like this familiar feeling. I'm still not sure, you know, until these test results come back, but it was something about her that was so familiar. I mean, my interest is peaked at this point. It was a short time frame, and we get the test results back, and she's, you know, 99.99% of my family. And I'm like, wow, this is real.
Did she provide any context or reasoning behind why your father deleted his Facebook page? Did you know at this point that he didn't want to talk to you, or was there any discussion of that?
There was, and she mentioned, you know, his page is gone, you know, he deleted it. Again, I don't know what exactly was said, but I knew at some point that his Facebook page had been deleted. So that's kind of a clear message, which I'm thinking too, you know, if someone told me that, I would probably freak out too.
Right.
I think one thing that I respect with his family, you know, at this point, I'm talking to his family, his mom. They didn't just offer up his contact information out of respect for him. And I never just asked for it, you know, because I knew that if they knew of me, especially her, you know, especially his mom, I know she's going to talk to him about it and know that he knows. So the ball is in your court at that point. So I didn't have a direct avenue of contact. I think at some point we knew his address and maybe sent letters to his house. I don't remember what they say. What they said. I knew though that he had two other kids. So he has two younger kids. And I knew that he lived with their mom. So I'm also considering the dynamic of what the introduction of me would do to his family at this point. I'm learning through his mom, you know, about him. And I learned that he's still a police officer. And I'm learning that he's a great dad, you know, of a son and daughter, and that he's a great guy. And I learn from, as I meet his family, that our personalities are very similar. Even just facial mannerisms are very similar. So I'm learning crumbs about this guy, you know, that I shared actual DNA with, but have yet to meet. And I kind of learn that his dynamic at home has got issues of its own. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just chalk it up to that, because at this point, you know, we'll fast forward a couple years. So everyone kind of knows. Mm-hmm. And I've not heard anything from him himself. So I'm kind of getting the idea that there's, you know, no interest there. I knew that his other kid's mom at that point was not very approving of me or this situation. I can't blame her, you know, because that's a big deal. So I think she hindered a couple things, you know, or this situation in general, which again, I can't entirely blame her. But I think I knew after a couple years that this was probably as far as that situation was going to go. you know? So I've got family members that I gained, but I have like this question mark, you know, in the place of really where I came from. So it was a lot going on.
How did you feel about that sort of, not necessarily like outright rejection, but sort of, you know, the fact that he hadn't reached out to you? You were 16, 17 at this point. Is that right? So how were you dealing with that?
So I think the way that I deal best is really just self-reflection and just talking it out with myself. I think if therapy works, and I probably should have been in therapy, honestly, I think it's a fantastic resource. But at this point, I don't have that. So I'm just kind of reflecting on everything in myself. And there's so many sides to the way that I could look at it. But, I have on one end of the spectrum, I feel terrible. I mean, it's like I can't catch a break. You know, I have a great dad and I lose him. And in my pity party, I'm thinking he didn't even care to hang around. So I feel terrible. And then I have my dad, who I just found out about. And he just doesn't have any interest. So that was a lot to deal with from, you know, a self-confidence point of view. There was even a stepdad in the mix that ended up not being a great guy. So I'm just thinking, I'm just not meant to have a father figure. This is just the universe laughing at this point. So that was pretty tough to deal with, especially at that age. At the same time that I'm dealing with this situation, I have to really dive deep and try to understand mental health. And I had to, you know, teach myself that it's not that someone left me outright. Someone had a mental illness, you know, that they lost their battle with. So once I kind of dealt with that situation, I think I kind of moved on to processing this next situation that I'm in. And I think I kind of came to terms with the fact that I know that he has kind of turmoil with the situation that he was in when I came about. You know, he's got two younger kids, and he's got, their mom that, I'm thinking, you know, to some degree, he's trying to make a relationship work. This is a lot for this guy, mm-hmm. You know, and then on the back burner, you have this situation that has come about. So instead of taking his silence or his lack of contact as an insult, I'm thinking he just can't handle it right now, you know, and that's okay. And I had to know that when I decided that I was curious and wanted to reach out, I had to remind myself that you didn't know how it was going to turn out, you know, and that again, I can't have expectations. If you don't have expectations, you can't really be disappointed. So I just reminded myself that this was a possibility of me reaching out, you know, no contact. So I eventually worked it out, and I think it helped that I knew and I was hearing from other people that he was such a good dad to his other two. And I thought, you know, at least this is not turning out well for me in multiple ways, but I think it really helped me knowing that at least he was a really good dad to these other two. And if me staying in the background helped him be that, then that's exactly what I actually wanted. Because if there were at least two kids in the world who had something that was good and something that worked and he was present, then I will be fine. I will be perfectly.
Wow.
So
that is such a compassionate and mature perspective, especially as a teenager. Wow.
I think that made me feel good, because the more that I heard that he was there for him, I knew that in my head, he's not a bad person. Because, you know, I still haven't met this guy. So I can see my mind trying to work out and put pieces together and have a mental idea of who this man is. And I hear from his family that he is such a great dad, and that if he decided to reach out, that it would be great because he is so great. And so in my head, I'm picturing this guy who's just kind of stuck between multiple situations, kind of just like I am. And I think he's just trying to make sense of it all.
So you still have not met him?
So I have.
So you have. Okay. Okay.
We went in total a stretch of 10 years with no contact. And at this point, I've honestly made peace with it. You know, I talk to his mom often. I go see her even. I talk to, you know, his sister. I talk to my cousins. So I talk to his family, and I know that he knows I'm involved, but this is just our dynamic, and I'm used to just non-conventional situations. So this is my normal, you know, so I have great relationships with them, and I'm thankful for it. And that just, that's what life is. It just is that. And then one day I'm at work and, you know, I get a message from my cousin on his side. So this would be his nephew. And he said, "Your dad wants to talk to you." And I was like, "What? What do you mean? Like, is this bad? And again, I want to point out that I think it was great the way his family handled it, because no one just gave me means of contact on his end. I didn't have any way to contact him. I never asked because I didn't want it to be that way. I think at certain points, members, even, you know, members of my mom's family maybe came to, I think they did kind of push the issue too harshly. And I remember asking for that to not happen. I didn't want that. He has means to contact me. And I just know at this point, it probably won't happen, you know, and that's okay. But the day I got that message, I was just like, I was shocked again, because this I had put to bed years ago. This would not happen. So what do you say?
Yeah.
So I finished my work day and I'm wondering, you know, because my cousin at this point, he said, you know, he wants me to send you his phone number. And so I was like, okay. So he sends it to me and I have this man's phone number on my phone, like on my screen, his phone number. And that just shocked me, because for 10 years, I did not have that. And now asking for contact. And so it was a very slow rest of the day at work. It passed very slowly.
Oh, I bet.
How do you start that? So I think I messaged him and I said, "Hey, this is Whitney. You wanted to talk?" And I think that's the first message I sent. So we did. He was like, "Yeah, I'm still at work. I'll call you later." And I'm like, I still don't know what to prepare myself for. There are no articles really to read or books on how do you talk to your dad for the first time at 25.
Right.
So I'm just like, I don't know. So yeah, I was very shocked, but it was on his own time. And that night actually ended up being a very big, I think, pivotal point in this whole situation, because that night he called me and we talked for hours.
Oh, wow.
So, like I said before, I've kind of constructed in my head this understanding and this idea of this guy. And I think I kind of was pretty spot on with some of the things I think I had made up in my mind about him. But I want to say I picked up the phone and I was like, "Well, what do you think?" And I think I was talking about this whole mess, you know, and so I finally got the missing piece that I really thought I would never have. And that was his side of the story. And it was really sad, I think, because he never knew. I mean, he found out when I did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, him and my mom had dated so briefly that he vaguely remembered her. And then he finds out, he said, "You know, I found out I have a 14-year-old out there and I'm shocked." And, you know, I couldn't make myself be mad, you know, because I knew that he had to have had a reason to not speak for that length of time. And I said, "Well, what's been going on in your head?" And basically it was that his situation that he was in, you know, was not a good situation. It was not a steady situation. And I remember him saying, like, he said, "My first reaction was, why are they doing this to her now at 14? You know, if you decided before she was born to keep it a secret, why toss her life up? You know, at 14, why tell her now? He said, I couldn't understand.
That's a good question. Why did your mom decide to tell you at 14?
I don't know. I think I would have found out at some point. So maybe it was best to go ahead and tell me. Like I said, she mentioned that she had always planned to tell me. And he couldn't understand that. I think after he asked that question, I don't know. Because, you know, if you plan to keep it a secret, stick with it. Maybe. You know, I can at least have some normalcy. But he couldn't understand why. He said, you were 14. I couldn't imagine at 14 getting that news. Like he said, I don't know what I would do with that. And he said, I could not understand why they were doing that to you and why I was getting such push into this situation, which I learned later. I said, you know, I had no idea that you feel like you're being pushed into it, because I don't think that's right. So I was really glad that I got to make that clear. And I said, you know, I really don't know. I really don't know. And he said, I hated knowing that you were going through that. And that was pretty big. And I mean, he apologized for the length of time. And he said, I knew that my situation was not good at home. And I didn't want you to have to deal with that situation. You know, I didn't feel like that would be good to bring that into your life on top of everything else. That I wanted to reach out when life was more stable, when I was in a better place to offer something, you know, to offer, I guess, myself being in a better place to you, which I think was a really big selfless thing.
So when he says he wanted to be in a better place, did he mean like emotionally? Was he struggling with something, or was it his relationship with the mother of his children?
I think it was the relationship, because that was a big deal. There was a lot that they were basically trying to determine the future of that relationship and, you know, of the kids. And that's a big, big situation in itself. When, you know, when you're in a relationship that isn't working, you have two young kids involved, which I'm so glad that he made that priority, because again, they are younger children. I'm older at this point. I've coped this far, so I'm going to be okay. But I really respected that, and I agreed with the decision, you know, and I got to tell him that I completely understand, because they, to me, came first. You know, I'm older now. Even at 14, I think I had already kind of been forced to mature more than kids my age, so I'm going to be okay, you know, but I think if they don't have to be exposed to any of these crazy things, then that's the better option. You know, the mother of his other children really did not harbor any good feelings towards me, good attitude. And I think that as long as she was in such close proximity, you know, living together or just emotionally involved, I think it was never going to be a good situation if he opened that up.
How old are your younger siblings?
So now, I'm going to get it wrong, but I want to say one's maybe 13. They're also like 3 years apart, which I thought was interesting. And his daughter is older, and then he has a younger son, which I thought was interesting, because I'm older than my brother, who, you know, we're also 3 years apart. So there's an age gap, you know, but not much. And I also thought it was interesting that, you know, his parents they're still together. They're still married. They're very involved with his other kids, which I think is fantastic. But because I was going over there pretty often, there were numerous times where I actually ended up being at their house at the same time, which was big. And I remember, you know, here's this new situation I need to figure out how to deal with. And I remember asking our grandmother, please don't tell them who I am. I don't want them to know. Let's just tell them that I'm your friend. And so I met them on numerous occasions, and I was Nanny's friend. And that's what I wanted, because that was not my place to tell them. You know, right. I think that needed to come from their parents, if at all. And I was okay being her friend forever, because that's a big deal, you know, and I definitely want to put that on them. So that's what I asked her to keep it as for a long time. And I think it did stay that way for a really long time. So they knew me. They knew I'm Whitney.
Right. I was going to say a little bit of an age difference there. Yeah.
I think their age, you know, being younger, they were like, okay, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Did you talk to your siblings and kind of get to know them without them knowing? What was that like?
It was small talk. So our grandparents have this old house that they've been in for maybe even longer than the length of my life. And it's just this little homey little house. And they have a fish pond in the back. And I remember, you know, I was over there one day and my sister is there and she said, well, come on, let's go fish. And I'm like, okay. So we go back there and we're just fishing and we're just having fun and we're talking and she's funny and parts of her face look like mine. And I'm just enjoying the situation for what it was. I knew then that the concept of me just being a friend that sometime around was set because she never asked. But I also remember standing there and I was like, I wonder if she'll be mad at me when she's older, if she finds out because I didn't tell her in this moment.
You've talked to your dad now.
Yeah.
You spent hours on the phone. Does he tell your siblings about you?
He did. He finally did. And I pointed out to him, I said, listen, I've never told them, you know, on this first phone call, I said, I've never told them. I do not want to tell them. That's not my place. If you ever decide, I said, even after this phone call, if you decide not to have a relationship, I respect that all day long. If you do, that's going to be up to you what you tell them, but I'm never telling them myself. But he eventually did. And I remember he would, you know, message me throughout the day. And it was just funny. How's your day? Whatever. And I was like, this is so cool. And then I remember the day that he said, I told them about you. And I was like, who? What are you talking about? And he said, I told them about you. And I was like, really? Because, you know, I think he knew at that point that that was a big deal to me. Mm-hmm. Like anything dealing with them was a big deal. So I think I knew then, I was like, wow, like this is really a thing. Like we're really doing this. I said, well, I have to know. What did they say? So he said, well, you know, his daughter's reaction was that she was not the oldest anymore. And his younger son thought that was hilarious. I mean, they received it well from what he told me. And I think I checked multiple times, even a week or so after. And I was like, are you sure that they're okay? Like, that's a lot. And, you know, she remembered seeing me there, so she knows who he was talking about. But I still wonder, like, what question, which I've seen her since, and she hasn't asked anything, but I really wonder how they're coping with it. I think I know it was a shock for me, so I still wonder. Mm-hmm. And eventually I plan to ask her.
Do you all live in the same town?
No, but we live in towns very close to each other. 20, 30 minutes from that town. So we're
really okay.
Close. And, you know, even before we spoke, I had seen him, you know, in public at different, you know, maybe city events or what have you, but never would have went up to him to speak at, primarily because, you know, I respect his boundaries at that point. But also, that terrified me.
Yeah, I was curious because you'd said you'd seen your brother and sister at your grandma's house. And so I'm thinking, okay, you all must live somewhat close. And so did you ever see him? So that answers that question.
Yes. And so circling back to the grandmother, who she's very fiery and she speaks her mind and she just does whatever it is she wants to. And I love that about her. But it's sometimes to a fault. And she knew both of us, and I think she loves both of us so much. And she wanted the situation to be kind of what it's becoming now. Mm-hmm. But she wanted it so badly. And like I said, there were numerous times where I had to remind everyone else involved to leave him alone. If he wants to, he will. He has the means more than most to find me if he desires. Mm-hmm. So just leave him alone. You know, it's fine. You told him, we've informed him of the situation. So it's up to him what he does with that information. And you can't spring that on someone and force them into dealing with it the way you want to. So we left it at that. But I remember one day I had planned to go visit with her maybe 2 weeks in advance. So she knew I was going to be there. And she had just told me about this new truck that he had got. She would mention him in passing when I called her. And I'm like, okay, that's great. I'm glad he's doing good, you know, whatever. So anyway, the day comes and I've planned to go to her house. And I pull up and this truck she just told me about the other day is there. And I was like, I'm going to have a heart attack. And so she normally can see me from the kitchen window when I pull up and I'll just see her wave. She runs out to me this time. I said, what are you doing? What are you working on? Because I see your face. Like, I see you have a plan here. She said, well, just come inside. And I, at this point, I knew he was probably in there. And he was. And I'm sure I kept it calm on the outside, but I was freaking out because that's a big deal. So she, I guess he had called and he said, hey, I'm going to swing by. And she, I think she had great intentions. And she thought if, she told me before, if he just meets you, he's going to love you. And I, again, that has to be his decision. But she kind of formulated this one. She kind of set this one up. And so I remember we're just sitting in this living room and I'm talking to my grandparents like I do. And I just see him looking at me. And he just kept looking over and I could tell he's looking. I mean, we look similar. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to be cool about it. And I also feel terrible because this is, to me, a violation of his of boundaries that I've kind of put there. Mm-hmm. So I feel guilty. But we really didn't speak, honestly. And I was like, I left there and I said, I don't know what happens now. I have no means of contact for him. I have no way to tell him I'm sorry. Like, I didn't plan that. I'm so sorry. That was just a random happening.
Oh, wow.
You know, but yeah, it was still a gap in time before we actually spoke after that happened. But again, I mean, pointing out he was still dealing with his situations.
Mm-hmm. Did he ever talk about what it was like for him to sit in a room with you when you hadn't actually really met?
Yeah, I think we did ask. He said, what was that? I said, she set us up is what that was. And he said, I didn't know what to say to you. And he said, I remember he said, again, I felt so bad because he said it killed me in that whole length of time. He said it killed me because I knew that you probably hated me, that you probably were upset. And I hated that if you thought any less of yourself because I didn't talk to you. And he said, there was no way for me to tell you it's not your fault. It's just not a good place for me to introduce myself into your life at that point. And he said, I knew that you were probably, you know, putting down on yourself or blaming yourself for it. And he said, that killed me for that whole length of time that we didn't speak because I didn't want you to blame yourself for it. But the fact that he, in that length of time, considered how it was affecting me too was... it was a big deal, and I don't know if he realizes that. That says a lot, I think. Mm-hmm. Even that he wondered.
Yeah.
You know.
So have you had the opportunity to meet and spend time together since you've spoken?
Yes, and again, there's no chart, there's no book. Even the people that I've met and gotten to talk to, you know, their journey may start here and go here and it's a gradual build. Or I may meet someone and you just hit a brick wall and then that's it. There's no linear way that this should go. And that's what I told him. And I kind of learned that in building the relationship with his mom. But I learned that that's how this thing works. You just go forward, you know? And so I told him, he said, well, I don't know where we go from here. And I said, we just talk. We just get to know each other. You tell me what you're comfortable with. I'll tell you if I'm uncomfortable. And he said, if I'm too much, you tell me. I said, okay, same. we'll just figure it out. And I remember he asked to take me to dinner, not like too long after we had spoken. And I was so nervous. I'm like, what do I wear? What do we do? What do we eat? Like, I don't know.
I had those same thoughts. Yes.
Like, they don't tell, like, you know, weddings, you have this kind of dress code and behavior. What do you do in this social situation?
What do you wear to meet your father for the first time? Yeah.
I don't even remember what I wore. But he picked me up and I got in the truck and I was like, well, hey. And I think it's funny because that's our personality. But we went to dinner and I was really relieved at that familiar feeling kind of extended to him too. I don't know what to make of that. I don't know if that extends beyond biology, but there's just this familiar, somehow my soul knows you. Mm-hmm. But we talked at dinner and it was never weird. And I remember I was like, I'm sitting at dinner with my dad. This is crazy.
Yeah.
But we went to dinner and then we talked about it and he talked to the cousin that I was close with, you know, that he reached out to. And he said, I think she's great. He said, I had no part in raising her, but I couldn't imagine dealing with what she has at her age and turning out as well as she has. And I was like, wow. Like, wow.
Yeah.
So we've met up and we've grilled and hung out and he took me to dinner because I recently found out I got into nursing school.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So he took me to dinner and I actually went for the first time this year to his family's Thanksgiving. So it was everyone and it was the best. Like I told my husband, it was like a Hallmark Thanksgiving. There's no drama. Like these are my people. And it's so crazy to say that. And I told him afterwards, I was like, that's where I should have been. Like, I should have been with this family, you know, from the beginning. But I was like, I'm glad now. I mean, we're figuring out. It's a process. I had to deal with my own trust issues, I think, because I would think, well, I haven't heard from him in a couple of days. I probably scared him off. Or his text message was a little shorter this time. I think I probably scared him off. Mm-hmm. Or maybe he changed his mind. And I know that he probably thought I was crazy because I would tell him just numerous times, just randomly. I said, if you change your mind, it's okay. I'll be fine. Like, mm-hmm. if I'm too much, it's okay. I'll be fine. And he said, I didn't change my mind. Like, I'm still here. It's fine. He said, did I do something? And I'm like, no, I'm just making sure if you want to leave, you know, you can. But I think that's just, I think that's the side effect of this situation. That's probably a defense mechanism. If I look at it, you know, I'll be fine if you're gone. Like, it's okay.
Yeah. And the trauma that you experienced when you were young.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's part of it.
So you kind of touched on saying that you felt like that's where you belonged. That's where you should have always been. Yeah. I hear that or some variation of that from other NPEs that I've talked to. Have you spent a lot of time thinking about the what ifs? What if he had raised you? And, you know, what do you think about that? And how do you kind of control going too far down that road?
Yeah, that I think is one thing that I thought was, that's why I jumped the chance to talk with you, because I think that you two can relate to that. Because, I mean, I could sit here all day and think if I had stayed with him, you know, what would my childhood have been like? Obviously, I would have missed a huge traumatic event, you know, so I'm envious of that, but I would have missed out knowing that dad, mm-hmm. you know, and I loved him very much. So in that sense, I wouldn't take it back, but it, again, double-edged sword. What schools would I have gone to? What area would we have lived in? You know, what things would I know? Because I've noticed too, when you're raised without a father for the bulk of your life, I don't know anything about my car. I don't really know how to fix things. I get lost everywhere. There's things that your dad should teach you. I don't know those things. I do wonder, like, what would I have, kind of person would I have been? But I don't know, because I think even all these terrible, crappy things that I've been through have given me a very unique perspective on the world. And honestly, I think they help make me a better parent. For some reasons, yeah, I would take it back, you know, because I feel so bad for younger me, because no one should go through that. But at the same time, I mean, I have to be thankful for what I went through and what I learned. So yeah, I wonder. And I hate that even for a moment he felt like that was taken from him because he wasn't good enough. Because that's not the case. Mm-hmm. One thing I haven't come across is having to deal with the guilt. Like, if I love this guy so much and embrace him, is that dishonoring, you know, the dad that I had? That was also a unique thing that I couldn't find anything on.
Yeah.
But I think you have to just really know that was one person, that was one point in my life, and that was one situation. This is separate, you know, and yeah, that is what it is. I think that this has kind of thrust me into re-examining my relationship with my mom.
My next question is what is your relationship like with your mom now?
So we were close. I mean, if I lost my dad at 8, so I have one parent. That kind of forces a dynamic in itself, that you're close to your surviving parent, you know, also could be a defense mechanism. But I mean, we've always been pretty close, and I respect that she told me about this situation, even if it was late. I respect that she has apologized for her handling of it and her decisions. I think she understands that there will be people, probably him included, that hate her and never want to talk to her. And she accepts that. And I think that's, you know, how it kind of should be almost, you know. So I respect, I guess what I'm saying is that she's owning up to it. Mm-hmm. But I had to deal with the fact that there was a life stolen from me. I mean, there's really no other way to put it, because, you know, it was, mm-hmm, and that's just the fact of it. And the life that I was given had all these bumps in it. Mm-hmm. So I could be bitter, and I think my mind went down that avenue, but it really doesn't get me anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, it does no good. And I mean, that's still my mom at the end of the day, and that's still my son's grandmother. So I think with our relationship, with this situation considered, especially after I met him, it just kind of shifted. So I'm still trying to make sense of how I feel in relation to, you know, her and her part in the situation. I think there was resentment, because it was like, I'm dealing with so much, and it's like two people made this decision 25 years ago, and it's like, here, you deal with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's frustrating, mm-hmm, you know, when it's like, this didn't have to be this way, and it's not fair that I'm having to deal with this and learn how to build relationships with people I should have known from the beginning. And so I think resentment is a natural feeling. It's a lot, and it's hard to explain to anyone who kind of hasn't been there. Some people I've talked to are like, oh, I couldn't do it. I would just be mad at everyone. And I think I've had to learn that sometimes it just doesn't really get you anywhere.
What do you hope for the future with your relationship with your mom, with your relationship with your dad?
I hope that we can build a relationship, which I plan to actually go see him tonight. We're going to grill.
Oh, great.
Such a normal family thing. And that's what I hope for, is just normal family stuff, and that we make the best of that situation. And that's my hope, is that we continue to do that, and that we just, like I told him, I said, it's just important to me. You know, I said, you don't have to apologize anymore for the time missed. Just make the rest of it count. Like, that is so important. That's it. Just make it count. I hope that I can get, I'm still trying to figure out my mom and my own relationship, because I have to deal with the feelings that came about whenever my real dad came into play. Mm-hmm. New things came up, new feelings, new knowledge even. So I think I'm still having to try to rework how I really feel about that.
and how to deal with it. We talk often, but as far as me really dealing with it, working on that. But I hope that I can just really let go of any resentment, because it's just not good for your soul, really. But yeah, I mean, I hope that he can be like a concrete, solid part of my life. And that's, if he is, then that's great. You know, for me, that's more people around to love my son. More family is never a bad thing. But it makes me feel good to know that my son will never have to go through this. Like, his dad is literally the best dad I ever could have picked for my son. So I'll tell him about this one day. Mm-hmm. And maybe even this podcast will help. I'll just play it. Here, listen to this. Yeah. And he's been supportive. He was like, you know, if you want to go meet this guy, I'll go with you. If you don't, me and our son will stay home. We'll hang out. And he just listens to me talk about it. And, you know, when I start to doubt myself and I'm thinking, well, he probably doesn't want to talk to me anymore. Or when my mind starts getting the best of it, he really pulls me back down. And he was like, you're doing it again. Like, you need to chill out.
Yeah.
You know, fine.
Has your dad met your husband and your son?
He has. So my son he doesn't know. He's two, but I think it's kind of, that's a weird thing too, because I mean, I think this is permanent, and I say that like he's making effort, and I'll forever be grateful, but still in my head, it's going to be a long time before I'm like, oh yeah, like this is it. He's not going anywhere. We're good. Like, I've not messed it up and it's good. It's just, that's my brain. It's just wired like this at that point. But I think, I mean, if it stays, like if he really wants this, then my son will get to know him as his grandfather. And that's my hope, you know, that that's probably more on my part, that this is a solid situation that will be there, you know, and my son will say, you know, this is my grandfather. This is where we come from. So yeah, that's my hope. But he's met him. It's just cool. It's cool, but it's also like I'm learning how to actually have a dad, because eight is older, but eight is still young to lose your dad. So I'm still learning, like, how do you do this? Like, what is it like to have a dad?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I think you kind of touched on this earlier, but what advice would you give to a parent who might be holding a DNA surprise from their child?
I would say be wary that things are out there now and they're very big and very popular, and it may not be a good situation to come to your child and say, I've kept this secret from you, but I think it should be told to them, you know, from the person who made the decision, rather than having to find out from different avenues. So I think if there's anyone in that situation, I would say maybe just tell them, because there's things that are coming to light now that are popular and going viral, and it will come out. And I don't think it would be as good as a situation if someone found out on the back end. You know, maybe just own up to it and say, hey, this was probably not the best decision. This is why, and this is how I handled it, and I'm sorry. And it was wrong. And how can I help you?
Yeah.
But where do we go from here? But I hope that somewhere, if there's a mom out there or something, that you doing this can help her make different choices, maybe.
What advice would you give someone who just discovered that they're an NPE?
Buckle up. therapy is a great thing. Do not be scared of therapy. Everyone needs help, and that is okay. Look for groups and look for people, because like you, even though I've been dealing with this for such a long time, I really just recently found this group of people who are in similar situations. And I've not had that resource for so long. And that has been like, wow, it's been awesome for me. So find people. And I hope that, you know, with 23andMe and Ancestry getting to be big and bringing these situations to light, that people who come after you and me will have that more readily to them. But I would just say talk to someone about it, because you cannot handle this by yourself. It's far too big, and you shouldn't have to anyway. If you start this journey, I think it's important to keep your mind really open and don't have expectations. I think it's also the biggest importance to know that this process is not linear. There is no right or wrong. There's no way to do this. You just do, and it is sometimes, and that the success of a relationship when you reach out to anyone, especially in an NPE situation, is not reflective of your worth as a person. Mm. I think I've told someone that before, but that's the biggest thing. And I know it doesn't feel that way always, mm-hmm. but that does not reflect on your worth as a person at all.
That's beautiful.
So that's what I would tell someone. But yeah, buckle up.
That's great advice. And well, Whitney, thank you so much for sharing your story. I think you are so compassionate and wise, and just, I think your outlook on the whole situation is really admirable, and I think people will really benefit from hearing this perspective. So thank you for your time.
Yes, thank you for sharing your story with me. I hope that it turns out in all the best ways for you. I hope you feel peace with answers that you may have gotten. And I think what you're doing is fantastic. So thank you.
Absolutely. And same to you. I wish you the best of luck on your journey. Thanks again to Whitney. If you have a DNA surprise story, email dnasurprises@gmail.com. And please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast so that we can help others facing a DNA surprise. Until next time.